Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with a Colorado Sun. It's Tuesday, January 17th. Today, we're talking to Colorado Sun business reporter Tamara Chung about the latest inflation numbers and how consumers are changing their spending habits. Before we begin, the Colorado Sun's inaugural Best of the Colorado Sun is officially open for voting. Vote for your favorite businesses and people across the state now through February 28th. You can cast your vote once per region. Visit coloradosun.com/bestof to vote today. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Members of the Colorado Highway Commission met for the first time at the state capitol on this day in 1910 to create a plan for developing a patchwork of paths into a network of roads sufficient to handle the proliferation of a new technology, the automobile. Steam-powered cars appeared in Denver in the 1890s, including one that gave rides at Manhattan Beach on Sloan's Lake. Cars eventually succeeded the era's other transportation fad, the bicycle, a vehicle one Denver visitor had declared an abomination in the sight of the Lord. William Felker Jr. opened a locomobile dealership in Denver in 1900, the state's first, and the following year drove the first car to reach the summit of Pikes Peak, 14 years before Spencer Penrose built a road to the top. In the summer of 1901, one enthusiast drove over the mountains to Leadville, while another paraded through Canyon City after law enforcement cleared the main street of horses spooked by the contraption. On January 14, 1902, Denver courts charged an automobile driver for the first time. The motorist claimed that his car drove 8 miles per hour through downtown, while police argued that he reached speeds of 40 miles per hour. The court fined him $25. Felker demonstrated the technology's potential and danger alike when he won a relay from Denver to Colorado Springs in 1902, but died when his car crashed in a race in Denver in 1907. Automobiles reinvented Colorado's landscape. Advocates sought better roads as both a safety and a tourism measure, and lobbied to preserve scenic destinations like Rocky Mountain National Park. Early highways often followed pioneer pathways, including the Cherokee, Santa Fe, Smoky Hill, and Trapper's Trails. Before we continue, a quick message. The Colorado Sun presents The Next Food Revolution: Growing Greens in the Air with environment reporter Michael Booth. Join the virtual event on February 9th to hear how a company is using a storage container to grow crops, how CU Boulder is growing greens in a sunroom, and much more. Register for the free event at coloradosun.com/events. Now our feature story.
Welcome to the Colorado Sun podcast, everyone, and thanks for listening today. I'm David Krause, one of the team editors here at the Sun, and I am joined with Sun business reporter Tamara Chung. Today, we're going to talk about some business stuff. Hey there, Tamara.
Hey, David.
How's your day going?
Pretty nice today. Nice slow wake up.
That's a good way to start the day. Hey, thought we'd talk about some inflation stuff, and I know you've been talking with some of the state's top economists recently. So let's get caught up on some of these inflation numbers that you wrote about in the What's Working. You wrote this week in the newsletter that one of the big things with inflation last year in Denver was that it was at 8%, which is the first time since the early 1980s that it's been that high. Tamara, can you kind of give our listeners an idea of what your sources are talking about and kind of what really drove that big jump?
Sure. So anyone who's been looking at their energy bill or gasoline bill or even eggs have noticed prices have gone up this year. And the thing is, you know, back in March for the Denver metro area, it was up 9.1%, which is really high because back through the early 80s, it was actually double digits back then, but it hasn't been, you know, above 6% since the 80s. So the latest data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics came out just last week, and it took every single month, you know, all those changes for the past year, and the annual rate of inflation was 8% for the Denver metro area, which is kind of the barometer for the whole state of Colorado. And that happened to be the same rate of inflation for the whole U.S.
And this is coming off of inflation that was really starting to gain momentum in 2021. And one of the things I thought was interesting in your newsletter this week was one of the economists you talked to mentioned this thing, the double dip effect. Can you kind of talk about what that means and how that's kind of compounded from 21 and 2022?
So the thing is, you know, 8%, that is one of the highest rates of inflation overall for everyone. But, you know, I think if you look at your own home use and your monthly bills and what you buy, I bet a lot of people will say, you know, oh, my groceries went up 50%, or, you know, a much larger number. And the thing is, it's because inflation was going on before 2022. Well, a year ago, December, you know, the inflation rate in the Denver metro area was around 7.5% or somewhere around there. And that's still one of the highest inflation rates until 2022 came along. So this is like a double whammy, right? I mean, prices were already up in 2021, and then they went way up in 2022. So that's kind of that double gut punch that economists are saying. You know, yes, inflation may be slowing now. You know, we hit a high of 9.1% in March. And then as of, you know, the end of December, it was at 6.2% in December. So that means the rate that prices are going up is slowing down. That's because we've already experienced all this inflation, not just from last year, but the year before.
So talk about, you know, you kind of touched on it a little bit ago, but it's more than eggs and food, right? It's transportation, it's housing. Those are the big ones. What are the things that people are seeing in their basket, so to speak, that are really jumping up?
Yeah. So, you know, the thing about what a lot of people are complaining about today, like, you know, I've written a lot of the stories about egg prices going up double digit percent rates. But I was talking to Brian Lewandowski, who is an economist over at the University of Colorado in Boulder at the Leeds Business School. And he was saying, I mean, his point is that, you know, inflation is measured by this basket of goods that consumers buy. So eggs are part of that, your gasoline, your energy bill, but also your house, you know, and transportation. So like new cars, you know, travel, you know, all this stuff. And eggs are just such a small percent of that, that even if those go up by triple, you know, the impact on inflation is very little. It's really things like housing that is shooting up inflation. You know, if your rent has gone up, you know, 30%, that is going to have a huge impact on your annual inflation. And so let's step back a little bit. Before 2022, you know, we had the pandemic, of course, and a lot of people who could buy bought a house, and those prices just kept going up and up and up. And so that was in 2020 and 2021. But in 2022, the housing market kind of stalled a bit because, you know, that's when the Federal Reserve got involved and started lowering interest rates. I mean, the opposite, actually.
I wish.
Raising interest rates. They raised it 7 times. And when that happens, you know, your $1,000 a month for a house, a really cheap house, would double in many cases. So just because the interest rate doubled. So anyway, so the point is, you know, housing prices did not go up as much in 2022. And that's why inflation isn't higher than 8% in 2022, even though egg prices and like your gasoline may have gone up. They're just such a smaller part of that basket.
So we're going to likely see it come down eventually, right? Probably not, as you wrote, until 2024. What are some of the economists predicting for the rest of this year, Tamara?
Yeah, so there's mixed opinions on that. I did talk to another economist about this, and that was Gary Horvath, who lives in Broomfield, and he has been an economist in Colorado for a long time. But he, you know, he looks at this and thinks, you know what, because of that double inflation whammy from 2021 to 2022, it's going to take much longer for things to cool down. So that's why he thinks inflation won't start falling until 2024. But other economists do feel like it will continue to slow. And the Leeds Business School does put it at around 4.5% for 2023. And remember, it was 8% last year. So that will be much slower. But what that really means is prices are still going to go up this year.
And with those prices going up, I'm sure, as you know, I mean, we have, you know, in my family, we've changed some of our spending habits, kind of different things at the dinner table. What are we seeing as far as consumers changing their spending habits?
Well, one thing could be eggs, right? I mean, maybe you don't eat, if you're a egg eater and you love eating eggs every morning, you know, you're not able to do that possibly because there aren't eggs available due to, you know, the avian flu, which we've talked about on the podcast before. But it could be, you know, if prices are too high, you may switch to, I don't know, cereal or a piece of fruit, you know, something where prices haven't been as impacted because of shortages and other transportation issues. But it could be, you know, gasoline. The price of gasoline per gallon has been going up again. And maybe you just don't do as many road trips. Or maybe if you're fortunate, you work from home more. There's just different ways people have shared how they change their habits because of the cost of living.
And speaking to that, if you know somebody who is struggling with their cost of living expenses, they're getting too high to handle, the state has a hotline set up. You can call 211 or visit 211colorado.org, and they can help you with electricity bills, rent, food, and some other monthly bills. I think what's really cool is that site is managed by the United Way, right?
Yes. And actually, it's not part of the state, but it is part of like a lot of nonprofit organizations, including the United Way. And what it does is you can get assistance in pretty much any topic you type in by zip code, or you can call and ask for that as well.
Wow, that's really interesting. I'll have to go check that out. And again, that is 211colorado.org, or you can just call on your phone, the number 211. Hey, Tamara, thanks for the chat today and helping us kind of understand these inflation numbers, because I know we get a lot of numbers thrown at us. And at the end of the day, it's kind of what's on the receipt that matters. So really appreciate that. And for our listeners, if you want to read more business news around Colorado, I invite you to sign up for Tamara's free weekly What's Working newsletter. And you can do that at coloradosun.com/working. And you can also go there to check out, Tamara does a weekly reader poll as well. Always a lot of engagement and a lot of fun to see what people are talking about and responding to. So go check that out. Tamara, really appreciate the time today.
Read more on this story at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Getting a free ski pass is not enough of a perk anymore for those who want to live in mountain towns and raise a family. Many Colorado ski resorts are adding childcare to the list of needs to help workers stay in their communities. Winter Park Resort started in the 1970s with an employee-run daycare housed in a resort building. Other operators have joined in, and now many of Colorado's ski areas are investing in childcare for employees to help keep them nearby. A group of residents in Garfield County is warning federal and state agencies that the community is ready to stop cooperating and start fighting as plans unfold for the state's 43rd state park. For the past 2 years, residents around Sweetwater Lake have been meeting with officials from the U.S. Forest Service and Colorado Parks and Wildlife about plans to turn the area into a state park. But the group is growing frustrated and feels like their concerns are not being considered. There are alarmingly high levels of forever chemicals in all samples of freshwater fish across the U.S. A study of popular Colorado watering holes turned up toxic levels of PFAS in every single sample. The Environmental Working Group study says eating one fresh-caught fish is the equivalent of ingesting highly tainted drinking water for 1 month. There is minor good news in that the EPA retests of previously tested streams years later shows a decline in chemicals in fish, but levels are still so high that the Environmental Working Group wants states to warn people who regularly consume their own catch of the dangers. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And The Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.